On This Week in Enterprise Tech, we have Mr. Brian Sheehan, Mr. Courage Franklin back on the show today. Now, patching is a challenge for any organization. What if I told you there's patching as a service? We'll talk about what that can do for your organization. Plus, true observability is a North Star for any organization. OpenTelemetry co-founder Morgan McLean is here to talk about the OpenTelemetry standard and just what it can do for your cloud applications. You definitely shouldn't miss it. Quiet on the set.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWIT.
This is TWIT, This Week in Enterprise Tech, episode 516, recorded October 21st, 2022. Single pane in the glass. This episode of This Week in Enterprise Tech is brought to you by Fink's Canary. Detect attackers on your network while avoiding irritating false alarms. Get the alerts that matter. For 10% off and a 60-day money-back guarantee, go to canary.tools/twit and enter the code TWIT in the How Do You Hear About Us box. And by NordLayer. NordLayer is a secure network access solution for your business. Join over 6,000 fully protected organizations. Go to nordlayer.com/twit to get your first month free when purchasing an annual subscription. Welcome to TWIT, This Week in Enterprise Tech, the show that is dedicated to you, the enterprise professional, the IT pro, and that geek who just wants to know how this world's connected. I'm your host, Louis Maresca, your guide through the big world of the enterprise. But I can't guide you by myself. I need to bring in the professionals, the experts in their fields, starting with the very own Mr. Brian Chi. He's net architect at Sky Fiber. He's a network expert, a security professional. Plus, he's all-around tech geek. He likes to play with things. I love that about him. Chibert, how are you doing, my friend? How was your week? What's keeping you busy?
I'm doing good. I'm actually getting ready and trying to get all the pieces together and packed away so that we can get ready for Maker Faire. I was visiting some folks in Gainesville a couple days ago, running, the first teams. Basically, it's a high school robotics team, and they're going to be running the learn to solder portion. So I went through and did some train the trainer stuff with them and make sure I stressed safety. And boy, those kids are talented. I really wish I could, I was able to teach high school again. That was fun. So big shout out to them. And looking forward to Maker Faire is basically everything I'm concerned with at the moment. And thank you to everybody with the well wishing. My back is much better. Thank you very much.
Now, safety, of course, for soldering, and of course, no sniffing either. No sniffing. That's an important tactic. Now, Maker Faire is coming up pretty soon, right?
Yep. November 5th and 6th at the Central Florida Fairground.
Fantastic. Looking forward to that. Well, speaking of Maker Faire, we also have our very talented security professional. He's Mr. Curtis Franklin. He's senior analyst at Omdia. Curtis, how are you, my friend? What's keeping you busy, and how is Maker Faire prep going for you?
We are also neck deep in Maker Faire prep. My dear wife and I have been down at the makerspace etching printing plates that we will use for the printing with a steamroller project. Looking forward to that. We're also going to be in the makerspace's booth for most of the time during Maker Faire. So got a lot going on. And then there's the whole thing about, even though Orlando Maker Faire is coming up, the cyber criminals of the world just take a break. So I've been having to continue to follow them. Got lots of interesting stuff going on. Looking forward to talking a little bit about it at the end of the show.
Now, October is Security Awareness Month, right? Does that mean some extra stuff's going on this month for presentations and stuff?
Well, it's been interesting. I've done a couple of presentations. I've been interviewed by a couple of journalists for Cybersecurity Awareness Month. It's interesting, the idea of a Cybersecurity Awareness Month. This is one of those things where, on the one hand, you would hope that people would be aware of cybersecurity year-round. But on the other hand, it's nice to have some time to spend some special time on it help keep people aware of things like, oh, I don't know, passwords and the importance of keeping them unique, safe, and secure. So I think it's overall a good thing. Like I said, been interviewed a couple of times and do intend to have at least one more good article in Dark Reading before it's all over.
Indeed, indeed. Well, speaking of spending special time, it's been quite the busy week in the enterprise, so we're going to spend some special time on it right now. Patching hosts and base images, clients, devices, services are a challenge to keep up to date for any organization. What if you had a patch as a service to handle it all for you? We'll get into what that means. Plus, true observability is a North Star for lots of organizations out there. OpenTelemetry co-founder Morgan McLean is here to talk about the OpenTelemetry standard and just what it can do for your cloud applications. Lots of exciting stuff to talk about, so definitely stick around. But like we always do, we do have to jump into this week's news blips. We've talked a lot about just how vulnerable GPS is. In fact, we talked about it in episode 420 of TWiET. Lots of things are synchronized with GPS clocks today. And with all the vulnerabilities built into it, organizations like the U.S. Army are looking for new solutions. Well, according to this MIT Tech Review article, Starlink just might be able to fit that role. Proposed back in 2020, Todd Humphreys of the Radio Navigation Laboratory of University of Texas in Austin proposed the idea of using Starlink's constellations of satellites to add a more robust service in place for GPS. Now, unfortunately, Starlink and Musk didn't want to veer away from their focus of getting their network up and scaling out at that time. So for the last couple of years, Humphrey has been reverse engineering the signals sent from those thousands of Starlink satellites in low Earth orbit to the ground receivers. In fact, they even built a little radio telescope to eavesdrop their signals, which is kind of cool. Now, they've been able to discover that Starlink relies on a technology called orthogonal frequency division multiplexing, or OFDM, and it's an efficient method of encoding digital transmissions, and it was originally developed by Bell Labs in the 1960s. Now, what he found out was that the regular beacon signals from the constellations are designed to help receivers connect with the satellites, but could form the basis of a useful navigation system, even without the help from SpaceX here. Now, in a paper he posted, the information and discovery are the first steps toward developing a new global navigation technology that would actually operate independently of GPS or even its European, Russian, and Chinese equivalents. Now, in fact, the synchronization sequences, which are predictable, repeating signals that are beamed down from the satellites in orbit to help receivers coordinate with them, were done so frequently enough for them to actually use them for positioning. Even each sequence was also contains clues about the satellite's distance and velocity as well. Now, with the Starlink satellites transmitting about four sequences every millisecond, that was enough for them to actually figure out positioning. Now, I really love this type of innovation, thinking about really outside the box and solving real-world problems with some of the technology that's even brand new that's out there. I, for one, hope that Todd and his team are able to get to SpaceX and Starlink and get them on board and start evolving an old technology like GPS.
We're all busy. I get that. And our brains get filled up with all kinds of important information. But taking the time to come up with truly unique passwords can be the most important security step we take, especially since pretty much all cyber criminals are using an existing list of passwords to do most of the heavy lifting for their initial attacks. Rapid7 recorded every attempt to compromise its honeypot over a 12-month period and found that there were just over 500,000 password permutations used in credential attacks. All but 0.003% of those passwords are included in a common password list called the RockYou 2021 file, which has, 8.4 billion entries. According to the article in Dark Reading, it would seem that attackers, being typical lazy humans, are sticking to a common playbook. Todd Beardsley, who's director of research at Rapid7, says nobody, 0% of attackers, is trying to be creative when it comes to unfocused, untargeted attacks across the internet. Rapid7 researchers focused on the common passwords used by attackers rather than those being used in defense, so the analysis applies to attackers' guesses in brute force attacks. These brute force attacks have risen dramatically during the COVID-19 pandemic, with password guessing becoming the most popular method of attack in 2021. Now, it's important to note that the 500,000 passwords Rapid7 saw represent less than 100th of 1% of all the permutations possible in the ROCK-U21 data set. And it's even more important to note just how generic the attacks really are. Beardsley says that the traffic Rapid7 is seeing indicates that these off-the-shelf attacks are happen with essentially no custom configuration. So what's an enterprise to do to up its security game? Organizations should continuously monitor systems for default and easily guessable passwords, which means running the ROCK-U 2021 list of stolen credentials against exposed and internal systems. Rapid7 also recommends paying particular attention to external-facing SSH and RDP servers, as well as IoT systems that may not have easy-to-change or even possible-to-change passwords.
Thank you to Ars Technica for this story about the FTC, Federal Trade Commission, is looking at fixing the concept of appliance repair, but it needs to step up its game and go beyond just manuals. Anyway, the story goes, the Federal Trade Commission is considering new rules that would require any appliances touting a familiar yellow energy guide label to also include information on how consumers can repair their own products. Citing its own Nixing the Fix report, the FTC states that repair information will strengthen consumers' right to repair damaged products without the need to go back to the manufacturer. This could save customers money, allowing non-licensed dealers and repair techs to better compete and protect the environment. Right to repair advocates are energized by the proposed rulemaking, the publication of which was unanimously approved. This is a big deal, says Kyle Wine, CEO of Repair Advocate and store iFixit, in this last Monday's press release. It's hard to think of a more impactful consumer-facing and repair policy move from the FTC or a more surefire way to get repair instructions into the hands of more consumers who need them. Weens noted that appliance manuals, whether provided by the company or written by iFixit members on the company's wiki-style site, are harder to come by than for small electronics. Most people don't want to take apart devices that weigh hundreds of pounds and draw heavy power or flammable gas to learn more about them. So the huge push for the right to repair seems to center around our friends John Deere and farmers fighting to be able to repair their aging equipment and having lots and lots of friends in Congress to complain to. The right to repair devices to get more life out of business critical machinery has become a battle cry in the open source world, farming, and Silicon Valley. The problem was certainly illustrated when the Twit Studio folks tried out the Apple Repair at Home system and found it more than a little cumbersome when the parts arrived barely before they were forced to send the extremely expensive toolkits back.
Botnets are still a thing, folks. In fact, with a VM exposed to the internet, you bet yourself that some malicious actor is going to want to add it to their botnet attacks. Now, according to this Bleeping Computer article, security researchers observed malicious campaigns leveraging a critical vulnerability in VMware Workspace ONE Access to deliver various malware, including the RAR1 ransom tool that locks files in password-protected archives. Now, the issue leveraged in the attacks is actually called CVE-2022-22954. It's a remote code execution bug triggered through the server-side template injection. Now, in the latest campaign, researchers noticed that a threat actor deployed the Mirai botnet for a DDoS attack, the GuardMiner crypto miner, and the RAR1 ransomware tool. Now, VMware released security updates when the flaw was disclosed on April 6th, which is actually quite a bit ago. Now, once the proof of concept exploits became publicly available, the product quickly became a target for threat actors. Now, starting in August, Fortinet actually saw a change in the attacks, which went from targeted data exfiltration attempts to the crypto miners, file lockers, and DDoS enlisting from a Mirai variant. Now, as always, although VMware released the fix several months ago, the report indicates that many systems still remain vulnerable. Now, the dangers are how they've shifted from limited scale targeted attacks to large scale infections using the entire malware sets, while the inclusions of the RAR1 ransom exposes companies to the risk of actual data loss. Now, what this goes to show you is if a patch comes out don't even go take a coffee bake break because, you know, you got to get upgrading and deploying that pipeline, right? Well, folks, that does it for the blips. Next up, we have the bites. But before we get to the bites, we have to thank a really great sponsor of This Week in Enterprise Tech, and that's Zinc's Canary. Now, if there's anything we've learned from this last year, is that companies must make it a priority to layer the security of their networks. Now, one of these layers needs to be Zinc's Canary. Now, unfortunately, companies usually find out too late that they've actually been compromised, even after they've already spent millions of dollars on IT security. Now, attackers are sneaky, right? Unbeknownst to companies, they actually prowl your networks looking for the valuable data. But the great thing about Canary is that they've turned this into an advantage for you. Now, while attackers browse Active Directory for file servers and explore file shares, they'll be looking for documents and they'll scan for open services across the network. Now, Zinc's Canaries are designed to look like the things that hackers want to get to. Canaries can be deployed throughout your entire network, and you can make them look identical to a router, a switch, a NAS server, a Linux box, or a Windows server, so attackers won't know they've been caught. Now, you can put fake files on them and name them in ways that get the hacker's attention, and you can even enroll them in Active Directory. Now, when attackers investigate further, they give themselves away, and you're instantly notified. Now, Canary tokens act as tiny tripwires that you can drop into hundreds of places. In fact, Canary is designed to be installed and configured in minutes, and you won't have to think about them again. Now, if an alert happens, Canary will notify you any way you want, and you won't be inundated with those false alarms. In fact, you can get alerts by email, text message, on your console, through Slack, webhooks, syslog, or even just their API. Now, data breaches happen typically through your staff, right? And when they do, companies often don't know they've been compromised. In fact, it takes an average of 191 days for a company to realize there's been a data breach. Canary solves that problem. Canary was created by people who have trained companies, militaries, governments on how to break into networks. And with that knowledge, they built Canary. You'll find Canaries deployed all over the world and are one of the best tools against data breaches. Visit canary.tools/twit. And for just $7,500 per year, you'll get 5 Canaries, your own hosted console, upgrade support, and maintenance. And if you use code TWIT in the How to Hear About Us box, you'll get 10% off the price for life. We know you'll love your Zinc's Canary, but if you're not happy, you can always return your Canaries with their 2-month money back guarantee for a full refund. That's canary.tools/twit and enter the go twit in the How to Hear About Us box. And we thank Zinc's Canary for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, it's time for the bites. Now, patching hosts, your base images, clients, services, devices, it's a challenge, right? It's a challenge for any organization, and it takes a number of cycles for any teams. In fact, it takes a bunch of cycles for my team to actually figure out the right way to do it and to do it securely and efficiently. Now, if your organization doesn't have the resources to stay on top of things, what does that mean for your security? What does it mean for all of your services, right? Well, what if there was a possibility of patch as a service? Could that help? What do you think, Curtis? What can help?
Well, I think we can all understand that patching, second perhaps only to choosing good passwords, is about the most important thing an organization can do to reduce the chance that there will be a breach. It is critical to isolate risks, to ensure that vulnerabilities don't become exploitable, and to ensure that workflows aren't interrupted due to allowing software to fall out of supportable versions. Now, the security risk is enormous. Verizon's 2022 Data Breach Investigations Report, which is one of the more significant publications in the industry, found that 70% of successful cyber attacks exploited known vulnerabilities with available patches. Problem? While everyone agrees that patching is important, it may not be urgent, at least not in the minds of the team. And when you, especially if you have a smaller team, those urgent tasks tend to mount and mount and mount until you have no time for the important things. So what can you do? One option that's becoming more popular is outsourcing the process of patching. Can save an organization time and money, can lead to improved security. It can provide a verifiable SLA or service level agreement that guarantees that patches will be applied within specific time frames. But like everything else, it comes with costs. And in this case, those costs can go beyond just the dollars that have to exchange hands to contract with the service. One example, an organization can lose visibility and control over the patches. The IT team might not know precisely which patches have been applied and which still need to be applied. Now, I think most people would say that if your organization has the capability, taking care of patches themselves is probably the best idea. So small to mid-sized organizations that don't necessarily have the resources to keep up with patching are the first wave of organizations taking advantage of this. And we're seeing more and more companies from different areas add the capability of patching. For example, there are companies like Onalytics that have added co-managed patching as a service to its security solution. So security companies are adding patching. Discovery companies, those that go out and do inventories to tell you what versions of everything you're running, are beginning to add patch management and patching as a service to their portfolio. But still, what you're doing here ultimately, and you have to recognize this, is paying a third party to take responsibility for a critical part of your infrastructure and your processes. Now, as these groups take over more and more accounts, they are relying more and more on automation. And this is the same kind of automation in many cases that your company could apply if it chose. Now, from where I sit, patch management software, the applications that automate patch management, are absolutely critical because they can take care of going through and patching not only all of your servers, but the various endpoints that need to be kept up to date. And they can do it without requiring that you develop, that you devote multiple individuals to the task. We've seen in the past that there are critical pieces of the infrastructure that require extraordinary access to things like administrator credentials. And if those pieces of the infrastructure are compromised, if those services are compromised, well, then your administrator credentials are compromised. So is it worth it? Where do we come down? Brian, I want to turn to you first and ask you, what do you think about this? Is it a risk worth taking for every company? Or should companies really carefully look at what their capabilities are before they consider a service like this?
You know, this is one of those questions that I keep asking over and over again. You know, how much trust am I going to put in the outsourcing? You know, whether it's, you know, someone, you know, sweeping the floors and taking out the trash, you know, we're giving them key cards so they can get in after hours, or credentials, administrator credentials, so we can patch the machines. You know, I know there's some granularity. Active Directory definitely has it. I'll show my age. Novell NetWare certainly had it. But things like Unix, some of it just doesn't have enough granularity. So you're, no matter what, patching as a service is going to require a level of trust that you're outsourcing. Now, is it better to just leave it unpatched? No, that's asking for trouble. But I gotta foresee that patching as a service is going to come with a lot of liability insurance. You know, as a certain type of consultant, I carried $1 million with an extra $1 million umbrella in liability insurance in case I messed up. What are the patching as a service companies going to do? How are they going to make you whole if your administrator credentials have been stolen because of their negligence? Those are questions you definitely have to ask yourself. If you're a small company and you just can't keep up, you know, having unpatched systems needs to be weighed with, you know, outsourcing your authority, you know, outsourcing the credentials. There's a lot of interesting things that need to happen. It is a really, really new industry, and there's a lot of questions, just like service level agreements for things like clouds have changed radically, radically over just the last couple of years. I think patching as a service is going to have to, you know, grow up a bit. But it sounds like a really, really good idea, especially if you just can't keep up.
Well, I was going to, Lou, it's good to see your face here because you were going to be next. I was going to ask you, you know, you deal with the creation of the software. And so from where you sit, I mean, how important is it? Is this something that companies should consider moderately important, or is keeping up to date on patches something that should be elevated beyond the merely important to the urgent and critical level for most companies?
So, you know, I thought I was going to get away scot-free here without any answer to that question. It's you know, patching is a challenge, and I think it should be at the top of the list for every organization. I mean, we just talked about, you know, even in the case of VMware, where, you know, people's VMs were still being exploited because of the fact that they didn't take the time to patch, you know, and there was already a fix for it. You know, this happens with many organizations. I work with a ton of organizations that are always already architecting services, which is cloud native services and applications, and they don't take the time to, you know, even if it's a manual deploy of an update to their services. You know, if you're using things like Kubernetes or Docker containers, you know, you have to sometimes go and patch the host VMs that are running these things. And, you know, and sometimes that can affect your services, your applications, and your software. And I can tell you that that's a challenge for any organization to have to deal with that. You know, why is there some side effects based off of these updates? And, you know, do I have to take my service down? Am I patching in the right order? Am I, you know, are, you know, services running or not running? And it just becomes a very big challenge and a very big time sink, and, you know, a lot, it costs a lot. And I, like we were saying in this article in the discussion, is it sometimes takes a lot of resources and a lot of knowledge on how to do this right, efficiently, and reliably. And I think that it should be the top of mind for any organization, because it could mean the fact that their software and services is vulnerable, and so is their data and their customers. And so taking it seriously could mean the difference between a business and an organization and an application being up and one being down and one being no longer trusted. So I think it's definitely something they need to put as prize zero for most things that they do.
Well, I think it's important to note that it is something that most companies are aware of, to the point that having a cloud service provider keep up with the patching and updates is one of the reasons many companies give for moving to the cloud in the first place. It's complicated. It's critical. And most companies would rather not have to do it. But if they do, a service might be the way to go if the conditions are met. Well, that's it on this story. We appreciate all of the attention people are giving to this critical topic. And attention is something that I think Lou is ready to give to one of our sponsors here on TWiET.
Thank you, Curtis. That's right. Next up, we have our guest. But before we get to our guest, we do have to thank another great sponsor of This Week in Enterprise Tech. And that's NordLayer. Now, we talk a lot about SASE, you know, the Secure Access Service Edge on the show. And you need SaaS security, you need threat prevention, you need secure remote access. Plus, you want to adopt zero trust. Well, NordLayer safeguards your company's network and data. There has been a huge surge of ransomware attacks and employees choosing to work remotely. Business networks have become more vulnerable than ever. Now, NordLayer secures and protects remote workforces as well as business data, and it can help you ensure security compliance. Now, with NordLayer, it's easy to start. It takes us less than 10 minutes to onboard your entire business on a secure network. You can easily add new members, create teams and private gateways, and even do things like IP allow listing, site-to-site connection, network segmentation. And in fact, you can even set up secure network access. Now, if you're looking for a way to get started, go right now to nordlayer.com/twit and get 1 month free and see how good NordLayer actually is. Now, that's not all. That's right, because NordLayer is also easy to combine as it's completely hardware free and it's compatible with all major operating systems, allowing you to implement security features across all of your teams. There's features like two-factor authentication, single sign-on, biometrics, threat block, and smart remote access. Now, NordLayer is easy to scale as you can choose a plan unique to your business requirements and your growth rate. You'll have everything you essentially need in one place where you can check the server usage and you can even view the activity log. Now, one NordLayer user said, "We're looking for an easy way to securely connect our remote workforce to our infrastructure. This is it. Awesomely quick, friendly, and efficient support got us up and running in no time." Another one actually said, "Simple to install and operate, no funny business, and so fast that our teams don't even notice they're using it." Most modern businesses are already adopting network solutions like SASE, Zero Trust, and hybrid work security. NordLayer has all of that and much more. Don't leave your business vulnerable. Try NordLayer today and join more than 6,000 fully protected organizations. Also, don't forget, October is Cybersecurity Awareness Month, so now is the time to safeguard your company with NordLayer. NordLayer. If you want to secure your business network, go to nordlayer.com/twit to get your first month free when purchasing an annual subscription. That's nordlayer.com/twit. And we thank NordLayer for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, it's now time for the guests where they actually get to bring some knowledge and drop it on the Twiet Riot. Today we have from OpenTelemetry and Splunk, Morgan McLean. Welcome to the show, Morgan. Really excited to have you here.
Glad to be here.
Now, before we jump into the world of observability and instrumenting your code, our audience has really a large spectrum of experience out there, and they love to hear people's origin stories. Can you take us on a journey through tech and what brought you to OpenTelemetry and Splunk?
Certainly, yeah. As a child, I was always very into computers. But in university, I had notions of going into mechanical engineering and things like that. But I was in the co-op program, and it was during the global financial crisis, and it seemed like the only companies that were hiring were software companies. So I did a variety of internships at Microsoft and BioWare and a few other firms, and ended up working full-time at Microsoft on high-scale web services for a number of years. Specifically it was like the Xbox marketplace, the Windows store, the backend for their retail store network that I think might not be around anymore. But I always ran into challenges debugging it. Whenever anything went wrong, we'd be on call, we'd have to go fix it, and our tools were very basic and insufficient for solving a lot of these problems. At some point, Google came around and chatted with me and gave me an opportunity to go head up development or head up product management of what they call distributed tracing and APM tools, which was incredibly exciting. And it was an opportunity to go build the next generation of DevOps tools that I'd always wanted to use. So I took advantage of that. And at Google was going and building those and growing our customer base. And this is really how we got into OpenTelemetry. Discovered that the biggest challenge for a lot of these tools is the ability to extract data out. So you can build the world's fanciest, coolest analytics system that gives you tons of great insights. But the biggest issue you have is that people use tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands or millions of different types of infrastructure and software packages and operating systems and libraries that they want to instrument. And so we started a project called OpenCensus that later became OpenTelemetry that solves this not just for Google and not just for Splunk, but for every single backend processing solution in existence. And so OpenTelemetry provides a way that those combinations of millions of different pieces of software or things that you want production performance signals from can send that data to any telemetry analytics system, whether that is Splunk Observability Cloud or Splunk Enterprise or Lightstep or Microsoft solutions or what have you. It can send that data in a format that is understood, and it'll send all the data you need. And so it solves a major problem. And my whole career's journey has taken me where I am today.
It's fantastic. Yeah, you're definitely right. I mean, I definitely deal with this on a daily basis, whether it's working with other organizations, just internally, you know, obviously, instrumenting code, collecting the right telemetry, having it flow throughout the entire, all the different tiers, and making sure that you make use out of it and be able to develop monitors and automation workflows off of it. It becomes a very difficult thing. And I guarantee it's a very rich environment. It has its own complexities. Now, obviously, there's, client service telemetry. There's metrics and analytics. These are special things in the cloud of, the world of cloud native, and there's tons to think about there. Now, I was recently working with an organization around client design and services, and we had a conversation around Adobe Analytics, Google Analytics, Snowplow Analytics, Twilio Segment. Of course, there's the concept of the Prometheus scrapers and to kind of build into these packages. Just lots of things to think about here. Can you maybe take us through the landscape here and what organizations should be thinking about?
Yeah, and it's a bit of a history lesson there too, right? Like, it's not my history in this case, but it's the history of monitoring and alerting and really observability, which is what the term people are using today. And so when we wind the clock back many, many years, you had logs, really, that everyone was using. And even if you went back to like old web services providers in like the mid, late 1990s, they would be using this, right? You go to like, I'm not stating this as like my own experience. I would have been too young, but like I'm certainly, if you went back in time to like Hotmail when they were a startup or someone, they would have had some kind of logging that they were paying attention to that they would use to debug issues and form other insights. Over time, monitoring also started to get added to that. And so monitoring is kind of a confusing term because it's both the concept of, setting triggers and alerts and things like that. But classically, it also refers to using metrics. And so you would start to capture metrics from your infrastructure, your CPU consumption, your memory consumption, things like that. And so those became sort of the two core pillars that a lot of organizations would rely on. And they would start to add metrics also from their core applications. So the request rate and latency and throughput of their various endpoints that people are accessing, and they would trigger alerts based off of that. Starting a few years ago, and this is really when Open Census and Open Telemetry come into the fold, distributed tracing started to become more popular. And that allows you to capture, basically see how a single request passes through a chain of microservices. So if you are, I'm trying to think of a good example, if you have an e-commerce system and your customers are having difficulty checking out their products that they're purchasing from you. When they click checkout, that presumably goes from your front end, like the actual website they're interacting with, to your back end services and hops around a bunch of different services there. What a distributed trace will show you is for a given interaction there, the exact chain of service hops that took place. So if the issue was five or six layers deep in your nested services, you can very quickly find that and then remediate that. And so distributed tracing over time got added. And now there's newer solutions like distributed profiling that allows you to see like how a single function call or effectively line of code would impact the performance of your application, and various other solutions that are being added to this. And so those are the different concepts. And just to relate this back to OpenTelemetry, OpenTelemetry captures most of these types of data today. It's adding more over time. And OpenTelemetry allows you to send these to different backends for analysis. So you mentioned Prometheus. Prometheus is, like OpenTelemetry, a Linux Foundation, Cloud Native Computing Foundation project that provides a backend for analyzing those metrics, right? So you can use Prometheus as this giant time series database to go store all of the metrics that you capture, and you can build alerts off of them, and you can go inspect them and build really nice dashboards using Prometheus and also tools like Grafana on top of it. And there's similar solutions for logs, and there's similar solutions classically for distributed traces and profiles and other types. And OpenTelemetry allows you to send these types of data to those destinations that you want. Sometimes the destinations are siloed. The ones I mentioned tend to focus on a single type of data. Right. There are others that capture all the different types of data. For example, I work on Splunk Observability Cloud. It uses all of those different data types to give you very strong observability, the ability to see all of your services and infrastructure and how they interact and how to fix them. It solves that problem. There are other solutions as well. Like Datadog is one that's very popular. There's many, many others. But that's fundamentally sort of the power that it's giving. And I think your initial question was like, explain why should people be paying attention to this? The answer is yes, absolutely. Right, if you're running web services at any important level of scale, you need these solutions not only to solve problems when you have an outage, but also just to speed up your development, right? So like I mentioned, I worked at Microsoft. One of the biggest challenges that I faced there was we were building a brand new set of e-commerce systems. And there was a very small number of people who could tell you all of the services that we built or were building and how they interacted. And to have any meeting of significance where you wanted to change something or build some huge type of enhancement to that system, you would need to have one of those people in the room who could draw on the whiteboard all of the different services. And you couldn't really do any sort of architectural designs without those people because you wouldn't know how certain things interacted. You wouldn't know how to extend a system. An observability solution like the ones I mentioned, well, they'll show you how all of your infrastructure and services interact, right? They'll draw that whiteboard drawing for you instantly. And indeed, they'll tell you the state of everything right now, if it's broken, where, you know, how to solve specific problems and much, much more than that.
So let me jump in here, because I know you know, obviously they should think about it, right? They should really keep it in their mindset that they needed to do this thing. Now, we talked a lot about I kind of named a bunch of solutions out there. You named some bunch of solutions. Now, some of them, like for instance, OpenTelemetry, you said it finds a way to collect data. It does it in a strongly typed way, has a bunch of data types. You can send it to any backend. Now, there are solutions out there. Like, for instance, I just recently talked to Snowplow. They do something similar, but then they also have a backend. And so they kind of promote the fact that it's very tightly integrated. They can do a lot more things with it because of the fact. Now, what is the advantage of having these kind of like separation of concerns there?
Yeah. And so I think the power for a true observability system comes from having all of those different types of data. So you're right. There's been various point solutions, even in the open source space. Right. Mm-hmm. I mentioned tracing. If you look at tracing, there's really two major open source backends that are popular. And there's Zipkin, which is a bit older, and then Jaeger, which came out a few years ago. And those are both very, very popular. And they historically came with their own instrumentation that would capture spans for distributed traces and send those back. And in some languages, the instrumentation would be quite good. In others, it might be quite limited. But pretend for the sake of argument that it was great and did everything you wanted.
Right.
But that still only gives you traces, right? And so when you want this full solution that actually tells you what the heck is going on with all your backend services and clients connected to them and speeds up your development, allows you to debug problems very quickly, you need all of these different signals. Historically, there hasn't been a single solution that provides all these signals. And so that's where OpenTelemetry really steps in. The other big thing to note about OpenTelemetry is after Kubernetes, it's the next biggest project in the Cloud Native Computing Foundation. It's huge. It has integrations for thousands or tens of thousands or I don't know the exact count, but like basically anything you want, it has an integration for. And so it can provide integrations in places where some of these point solutions wouldn't classically be able to provide one because they would need some hilariously large team of engineers to provide those, which they didn't have.
Now, I have read a little bit about, there are obviously two standards here. There's OpenTelemetry and there's OpenMetrics. What is the difference between these two specs?
It's a good question. OpenMetrics is mostly, I think it's mostly Prometheus people working on it. And so it adheres very closely to what the Prometheus metrics model that has always existed. I believe when the first draft of OpenMetrics came out last year, it's mostly a description. It's like a description, like effectively in English human language of this is a metric. A metric can exist in these various formats. You can do these things to metrics. If you're performing an aggregation, here's the mathematically correct way to perform it. I don't believe, and my knowledge here might be out of date, but I don't believe Open Metrics has any implementations. I think Prometheus is the implementation of Open Metrics. OpenTelemetry has its own specification, its own definition of metrics, how they interoperate, how they work, the things you can do. It also has a full implementation, right? There's language libraries for every single language you can use. There's language-specific agents for every language you would want. There's a collector agent that captures these. It has all the components you need. And it implements these both with its own model, which it can export to any destination you want. And it can also receive metrics from Prometheus using OpenMetrics. From its own components, its own OpenTelemetry components, or various other metric-sending components like Telegraph or others. And so you can use OpenTelemetry natively, I think most people do, when they're using OpenTelemetry to natively pick up metrics from your applications and your systems and everything else and send those to wherever you want. But you can also use it effectively as a hub or router where it's pulling in metrics directly from Prometheus. And indeed, it can process these transparently where you could pull them into OpenTelemetry and then export them again as Prometheus or as OpenMetrics in this case. And they would just, it would do the processing you want. So nothing would go wrong. It just works.
I could geek out about telemetry and metrics for a long time, and my team can tell you that. But I do want to bring my co-host back in because they're chomping at the bit here. Let's start with Curtis first. Curtis?
Thanks, Lou. Morgan, one of the things that we hear a lot about in the industry, you know, people will use the phrase a single pane of glass as shorthand for what they think the ultimate situation might be, where you have one screen that shows you absolutely everything a person could want to know about the most complex infrastructures in the known universe. Is that the goal of what you're working toward here, or is that the wrong way to look at where this could be going?
It's certainly a way this is going. To clarify, it's probably important also to distinguish, like, I'm one of the co-founders of OpenTelemetry. I work on it. I also work on observability tools at Splunk on Observability Cloud specifically, where I'm responsible for a number of things. But I think in both cases, generally, yes. And I'm sort of caveating this somewhat, but I think generally observability tools and thus OpenTelemetry, which provides the data to a great number of observability tools already, are going to be focused on this single pane of glass scenario where you have an observability tool that shows you effectively everything you need in your entire estate. And so it's important that OpenTelemetry capture each of those different types of signals with as much fidelity from as many sources as possible and that it can correlate them. One of the big points of using OpenTelemetry is that it can pull in these different types of data and like I mentioned, actually perform those correlations. So you can do things like for a given span, see what service it was from, and then correlate that with various logs that were captured from the same service and host metrics or application metrics that also are related to that. That allows you to build that single pane of glass experience. You can't really do that effectively without those correlations. That being said, there will probably always be a place for certain point solutions, right? If you look at the observability market today, there's certainly a lot of consolidation. You see that at Splunk. You see that at a lot of other firms as well, where they're attempting to build a single pane of glass because it's very useful and very powerful. But there's still like tools that are designed to delve into databases with great depth, right? That give you like very deep insights that only maybe a database tool would. And there's others, you know, specific examples of that. I think someone mentioned Google Analytics. There's still a lot of web analytics tools that are very specialized. Over time, the number of specialized tools may shrink to some extent because the big single pane of glass tools simply absorb their capabilities. There may also still be pockets where you have niche tools that have very specific capabilities that may pull in their data from OpenTelemetry because it has the data they need, or in some cases might pull it in from specialized sources if those are so unique, so niche that maybe OpenTelemetry doesn't support them.
Well, speaking of niche sources, one of the collections of niche sources is operational technology, or for those not in the business, IoT on an industrial scale. We've been talking a lot about telemetry from the IT perspective, but as you look at OpenTelemetry, is this something that would have application perhaps in that OT world to be one of the things that makes it easier to bring OT observability and telemetry and IT together into one collection of data that can be analyzed?
Over time, I think definitely. OpenTelemetry historically has been very focused on back-end services, the things you're running on cloud infrastructure and your own data centers. That focus has broadened over time to also include client applications. So capturing like critical performance telemetry from like Android, iOS, web applications, things like that. That's still under development. That's not quite GA yet, but it is a thing the community is very engaged on. IoT devices, I think, are also an interesting extension of this. It isn't a thing that the community has explicitly focused on yet, but I think that's a very clear step at some point in the future to capture telemetry from those sources. Because they're being used in production ways, right? Like they're probably not being used within the data center to actually host live web services, but they are critical sources of telemetry that you want processed somewhere. And there's also a lack of standards in that space. So I think OpenTelemetry could bring a bunch of value there. And it would also be just a natural extension of OpenTelemetry's vision once the immediate next steps are already filled out.
Well, I know that Brian wants to come in. I do have one more question, though, and it gets to another one of those niche applications. It seems to me that this would be an ideal solution for things like scientific instrumentation, where one of the critical points is gathering data from all kinds of different systems. And you know, is that something that you have thought about? I mean, whether or not you're getting active queries, when you think about this, is that one of the places that you let your mind go?
You know, it's funny, for the IoT question you asked, I've heard before, and it's something I've mulled over. It hasn't been a top priority of the project because we've been so focused on web services and infrastructure and then front-end applications. But I suspect for the IoT part, if you'd polled anyone in the community at any point in the last year, they'd be like, yeah, you know, eventually we'll get to that. No one has mentioned scientific measurement equipment. And I appreciate it. It does actually fall, in some cases, into the IoT category. I don't know why not. Right. Like, it's another place that would benefit from these standards. I don't know if members, the people who use it, or the kinds of people who use it and contribute to it, are not the people who have classically been part of the OpenTelemetry community. That being said, that's actually really interesting. And I could definitely see us trying doing that at some point. I don't really have a better answer because I haven't thought about it before. That's very, very clever. It's a very good question.
Actually, that's a good place for me to jump in, because I am in the scientific community, and time series data has been a huge challenge. Yep. And let me give you a clue. The vast majority of time series data, do you know how it's stored? Flat files, comma delimited.
CSVs, right?
And I've been yelling like crazy in the community and saying, hey, you know, guys, we need to do better. And I actually got a grant from Splunk but to go and do this, but they just didn't want to eat the learning curve. Anyway, that's enough.
I could definitely see value there. Like, I remember I have a degree in 2 degrees and once in applied physics. And I definitely remember like various lab sessions were collecting you know, gigabytes of data and just spitting it out in a CSV and then using Python code or even in Microsoft Excel to cut through it.
I used to teach Oceans. I used to teach Ocean 3.18 and 4.18, where we taught students to use Arduinos and Raspberry Pis to build their own instrumentation. Anyway, the real question I'm asking is, gee, this is all sounding really good. I love the direction of standards and the capability of going to a single pane of glass, or maybe it should be a customized pane of glass. That seems to be good. But let's ask the question for the people that want to get started. To use OpenTelemetry that you're describing, do I have to run Splunk? How do I get started with this?
To be clear, I could have been more explicit initially. OpenTelemetry is not a Splunk project. We're one of the biggest contributors, but like, there's many, like, it's like Splunk is there, Lightstep, Microsoft, Google, Amazon,
New
Relic.
Where can people go?
How do we get started? Yeah, so there's a website, opentelemetry.io is the core project website that has guides on how to get started. The code is available on GitHub. It's a totally open, like pure open source project. It's not even open core, where there's like a single vendor behind it. There's various components that you, depending on your requirements, you might need various components to get started. Typically, you use the OpenTelemetry Collector. This is effectively an agent that runs on a host. It captures host metrics and logs and things like that. And then if you're running your own applications that you want instrumented, you would use one of the language components. So for Java, for example, there's a Java SDK and a Java Automatic Instrumentation Agent. And you would use one of those. The instrumentation agent tends to be the much easier one to get started with, to capture spans for distributed traces and perform context propagation inside of your Java application. So you would just deploy it alongside your JVM, reference it once, and it just works. And it will send data to the collector. The collector sends data to wherever you want to send any of that OpenTelemetry information. And it's probably important to note, you can send data to many places at the same time. So you can use multiple analytics solutions on the exact same streams of data.
Cool. Yeah, because one of the frustrations in the world of electrical IoT, you know, smart meters and things like that, is needing to go and serve multiple masters.
Yes.
That has always been a big deal. And the other problem is a lot of systems like smart transfer switches, smart meters and things like that are actually really primitive.
Yes. I went down the deep end this year on home automation with Home Assistant and various other home open source solutions. Yeah. And I'm actually trying to get my electrical meter to work with it right now.
Yeah. I've been doing a lot of work with like the GE smart meters for commercial uses. Even those are really primitive. So here's the question. Is the community working on trying to have some sort of collector that can front end the less intelligent devices, like PLCs, transfer switches, even the smart meters aren't
like smart. There's nothing there specifically for, say, scenarios that involve PLCs or some of these IoT devices yet. That being said, architecturally, the OpenTelemetry Collector, the agent that I mentioned earlier, you can deploy it as a web service. And in hundreds or thousands of organizations around the world, they have it deployed as a web service to basically proxy all their metrics or proxy all their outgoing telemetry from their back-end web services and infrastructure and things they're running. Architecturally, that is the same way you would probably use it in an IoT scenario, where you have it running on a host or as a container somewhere in your network, and it is going and querying or receiving data from your various IoT devices. Again, the integrations, the receivers and the OpenTelemetry parlance don't exist yet for the collector for most of these IoT sources, right? So like I mentioned, I'm trying to get my power meter to work. It has some adapter that sends out data. We're using like MQTT, for example. I don't, as far as I know, there's no MQTT like metric receiver in OpenTelemetry yet. There might be, perhaps I'm just mistaken, but I don't think there is one. But as soon as someone goes and builds that and adds it to the collector, you're basically good to go, right? Like architecturally, the rest will just work. And OpenTelemetry can send those metrics to Prometheus or flat files or even CSVs if you want them, or really anywhere else where you want that data to be sent and processed. And so most of the components, all of the really hard part is done. It really, for that scenario, it just needs a few receivers to be written and it'll just work at that point.
Well, you know, speaking of hard part, let's talk about compliance and security. That's been a really big challenge in the IoT world. And if you're doing business in Europe, you know, GDPR is a big deal.
Yep.
Have you guys had conversations about this? Is that being designed in?
So security is like a first class thing that we're very concerned about and take action on in the community. To be clear, like you mentioned GDPR, the types of telemetry being captured by OpenTelemetry today, unless someone went and explicitly like extended it to do this, are not capturing the types of things that you'd generally be concerned about GDPR. This is like back-end performance metrics from hosts and from your infrastructure and your services. So things like request latency, throughput, stuff like that. Though I suppose someone could go, like an end user who's using it could go extend the metadata to add things like that. But generally, this has not been a concern. That being said, it's a good point. And as OpenTelemetry expands to capture performance and production telemetry from client applications, that will become a bigger concern. And so it is a thing that we will need to take note of. To go on actually a slightly different direction with your question about security, though, like I do think OpenTelemetry effectively provides significantly more security to companies. There was an example last year of a firm that supplied IT management agents to customers, including, I think, like actually Microsoft and the U.S. government, that was compromised. And the agents that they supplied in turn to their customers were compromised. And thus, Microsoft and the U.S. government and various other large organizations got hacked. And that was just because they had a private third-party agent that they couldn't validate the code of that they had to deploy their IT infrastructure, and that agent was compromised. If you're in a high-security environment and you care about this sort of thing, OpenTelemetry is absolutely fantastic for you because, sure, you can take the pre-compiled builds of different components that we have available on Maven and various other, you know, NuGet and various other language-specific places. And you can just go build those and put those into your application. Fine, that works. That's very easy. But if you're more concerned, OpenTelemetry lets you control your software supply chain when it comes to the agents you're using to capture telemetry, because you can just build the whole thing from source, right? It's all on GitHub. Even the exporters that send data specifically to like a certain maybe private endpoint, that's all open source. You can validate that code. You can run your own builds. And so if you start adopting OpenTelemetry instead of proprietary third-party agents, you are dramatically, in my mind, improving the security of your organization, your backend services, because you're not letting the compromise of a vendor compromise all of your production workloads.
Unfortunately, time flies when you're having fun. Morgan, thanks so much for being here. Great topic. We probably could talk about it for forever. I love geeking out on data. But we wanted to give you a chance to maybe tell the folks at home where they can learn more about Splunk, OpenTelemetry, how they can get started, obviously.
Yeah. So for OpenTelemetry, it's opentelemetry.io and github.com/open-telemetry. Those are the two best places to go to get started with the project. Like, we love more people using OpenTelemetry. We love having more people enter the community and start contributing. It's a very, very healthy, friendly community. We just adore having more people there. If you want to learn more about Splunk, Splunk really has two products related to this. There's the core Splunk product, Splunk Enterprise Cloud, and there's Splunk Observability Cloud, which uses the sort of new types of data that OpenTelemetry sends natively. It's our first class way of getting data in. We don't have our own agents for Observability Cloud anymore. We just use OTel. And for that, you can go to splunk.com/observability. And we also have various landing pages for OpenTelemetry with Splunk.
Fantastic. Thanks again. Well, folks, you've done it again. You sat through another hour of the Best Dang Enterprise podcast in the universe. So definitely tune your podcatcher to Twyatt. I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible, especially my co-host, starting with the very own Mr. Curtis Franklin. Curtis, what's going on for you in the coming weeks? Where can people find you and all your work?
Well, I am working on a bunch of different research pieces, trying to get a lot of things done before the end of the year in both the training space. I'm working on cybersecurity awareness training. That's employee training. Beginning to work on professional training and starting to do some research on things like AI and security. Would love to know what people think about AI and security and whether their company is using it. Drop me a note. You can do a direct message to me on Twitter. I'm at KG4GWA. You can follow me on Facebook or on LinkedIn, or even shoot me a comment to one of my articles on dark reading. That's darkreading.com/Omdia. Love to hear from you. Always appreciate hearing from members of the Twyatt Riot.
Thank you, Curtis. Well, we also have to thank our very own Mr. Brian Cheebert. What's going on for you in the coming weeks? Where can people find you, and where can people find you at Maker Faire?
Well, I'm going to be wandering around at Maker Faire, but you know, I was actually very quickly typing away with my thumbs, sending the opentelemetry.io link to a bunch of researchers I used to work with at the University of Hawaii. I used to teach Ocean 318 and Ocean 418, and OpenTelemetry sounds like a righteous way of organizing and data mining data that we bring in from the field, especially since so far, I'll bet you if I asked that OpenTelemetry doesn't require a ton of bandwidth, which is perfect for field ecology. Anyway, I love to hear from you folks on what you're doing, and you can hear what I'm doing. I do a lot of stuff on Twitter. I'm ADVNETLAB, Advanced Net Lab. You're also more than welcome to toss me some email. I'm Cheebert, spelled Cheebert at twit.tv. Or you're also welcome to send email to twyatt@twit.tv, and that'll hit all the hosts. Would love to hear from you. And you folks have some great ideas, guys and girls, and I want to hear them. Talk to me. Take care.
Thanks, Cheebert. Well, folks, we also have to thank you as well. You're the person who drops in each and every week to get your enterprise goodness. And we want to make it easy for you to watch and listen to catch up on your enterprise and IT news. So go to our show page right now, twit.tv/Twyatt. They'll find all the amazing back episodes that we've done. Of course, the show notes, the host information, guest information, and the links to the stories that we do during the show. But more importantly, next to those videos there, you'll get those helpful subscribe and download links. That's right. There you go. Get your audio version, your video version of your choice. Listen on any one of your podcast services or podcast applications, because we're on all of them. So definitely subscribe and support the show. Plus, you may have also heard, we also have Club Twit. That's right. It's also a members only ad free podcast service with a bonus Twit Plus feed that you can't get anywhere else. And it's only $7 a month. And there's a lot of great things about Club Twit. One of them is the exclusive access to the members-only Discord server. You can chat with hosts, producers. You can have side discussions in different channels. Lots of great channels on there. Plus special events they have. A lot of great events you can listen to. Of course, lots of great discussions and fun. So definitely join Club Twit. Be part of the movement. Go to twit.tv/Club Twit. You got to also remember Club Twit offers corporate group plans as well. Well, it's a great way to give your team access to all of our ad-free tech podcasts. The plans start with 5 members at a discounted rate of $6 each per month. And you can add as many seats as you like. It's a great way for your IT department, your developers, your tech teams, your sales teams to really stay up to date with access to all of our podcasts. And just like regular memberships, you can actually join the Twit Discord server and get that Twit Plus bonus feed as well. So definitely join Club Twit at twit.tv/Club Twit. Now, after you subscribe, impress your friends, your family members, your coworkers with the gift of Twiit, because we do talk a lot about fun tech topics on this show, and I guarantee they will find it fun and interesting as well. So definitely share it with them and have them subscribe. Now, if you've already subscribed and you're available at 1:30 p.m. Pacific time on Fridays, we do this show live. That's right, live right now at live.twit.tv. There are all the amazing streams that we have, different stream providers, and you can come see how the pizza is made, all the behind the scenes, the banter, the fun that we have here on Twit. Definitely watch the show live if you have a chance. Of course, you're going to watch the show live. You have to jump into the infamous IRC channel as well at irc.twit.tv. I am in there right now. I'm in there every week. I try to be in there sometimes over the weekends because there's a lot of great characters in there. We like get a lot of great conversations. So definitely join that the channel, the IRC channel as well. Definitely hit me up. I'm at twitter.com/LouMM. There I post all my enterprise tidbits. I like direct messages from people like you. You give me a lot of great show ideas. And also hit me up on LinkedIn as well, because I got a lot of direct messages and messages there on show ideas and options. And of course, you can always hit the host at Twiit at twit.tv as well. Now, if you want to check out what I do during my normal work week at Microsoft, definitely check out developers.microsoft.com/office. There we post all the latest and greatest ways for you to customize your Office experience. And definitely check out Office Scripts, because my Office Script Services team is one of the big teams behind all of the Office Scripts that you can run macros in the Power Automate environment, allows you Power Automate them in an unattended way. And definitely check that out, because it's a new, more powerful way for you to customize your experience. I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible, especially to Leo and Lisa. They continue to support This Week in Enterprise Tech each and every week, and we couldn't do the show without them. So thank you for all the support over the years. Of course, thanks to all the staff and the engineers at Twit. And of course, I want to thank Mr. Brian Chi just one more time. That's right. He is our co-host, but he's also our tireless producer as well. He does all the show bookings and the plannings for the show. We really couldn't do the show without him. So thank you, Chibert, for all your support. And of course, thank you. I want to thank, before we sign out, thank you for our editor, because they make us look good after the fact. And of course, cut out all of my mistakes. So thank you, sir. And of course, thank you to our TD tier today, Mr. Anthony. Thank you for all your support for making this show seamless as usual. You are master there. Thanks again, Anthony. And until next time, I'm Louis Maresca, just reminding you, if you want to know what's going on in the enterprise, just keep Twiit.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? I am Matt Pruitt, and I am the host of Hands-On Photography here on Twit TV. I know you got yourself a fancy smartphone, you got yourself a fancy camera, but your pictures are still lacking. Can't quite figure out what the heck shutter speed means? Watch my show. I got you covered. Want to know more about just the ISO and exposure triangle in general? Yeah. I got you covered. Or if you got all of that down, you want to get into lighting, you know, making things look better by changing the lights around you. I got you covered on that too. So check us out each and every Thursday here on the network. Go to twit.tv/hop and subscribe today.